Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Wow, this is quickly becoming like one of our favorite times of the week. We'll do it every single Wednesday, and I know you and I, Dibs, are both kind of chomping at the bit here to go, not player by player. We're not going to go through the entire roster.
We might.
But maybe close.
Yeah.
You know?
The man's got info now. Got that knowledge.
Well, he is senior producer, NFL Films, and he's joining us on the Rivers, River Islands guest line, as he will do every single Wednesday at 3 o'clock to break down the film like no other. It's none other than Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, how you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I'm just curious, was that lead-in song representative of your younger days, or are we okay with that?
I'm completely okay with that.
Big time.
So I'm going to say maybe both, Greg. How about that? Can I answer that way?
You can answer any way you like.
Okay. That's what the film says, Greg. Right. So that's what we're going to go with. All right. Where to start? I guess Jordan Mason is the best place to start. So, first and foremost, just what did you see with his evening? But maybe more important, how did it progress? Like, what did he look like when it got to the fourth quarter and he was north of 20 carries?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot there that with the run game. But if you're just speaking about him, you know, I think that was evident even early on, but it was clear as the game progressed how physical a runner he is. And there were some clear examples where the Jets defense later in the game was not particularly thrilled with having to tackle him. You know, he's one of those runners that you wouldn't say he's shifty and elusive. He's a downhill velocity runner. He has natural power. There's a physical presence to his running style. He has just enough lateral quickness where he can work effectively in confined space. And as I said, he's got really good finishing traits. He's a difficult guy to tackle and probably not a lot of fun to tackle.
I can't imagine it. And it seemed like he got to the second level ad nauseum against the Jets defense. Those holes were gigantic.
They sure were.
Did they go about the run scheme differently, Greg? Because it seemed like there was less use check and more just straight ahead zone power with Jordan Mason.
Yeah, there were multiple run game concepts, as there always are, with the 49ers. You know, I think when you play the Niners, you're very conscious of having to defend the C gap. That's where, so people can kind of visualize that, you know, right next to the center, the offensive center is the A gap. You go over one, it's the B gap. You go over one more, it's the C gap. That's kind of where their run game is foundationally built. But obviously they do more than that. So they did a number of different things. The key thing was that he ran almost exclusively out of what we would call base personnel. When Juszczyk was on the field, when there were two tight ends on the field, when there was both Juszczyk and two tight ends, 23 of his 28 runs came in these base personnel packages.
Greg, I'm curious to know if you saw them running to the right more often than in the past, because famously they love to run behind Trent Williams, but it looked like they were running to the right more often than in the past. Is that so?
You know, I didn't chart it, so I don't know the exact answer, and I don't want to make something up, but I didn't get the sense that they were only working to one side. I felt like it was pretty multiple. You know, it's funny. Sometimes the shorter runs are the really cool runs. Like, I thought that his 5-yard touchdown run in the third quarter was just an example of great design and execution. I thought that you had an unbelievable double team by the center, Brendel, and Banks, the left guard, and it was on Quinnen Williams, who's obviously a really good player. I love the way Kittle inserted as a lead blocker on the stacked linebacker Mosley, and then Samuel came in from the right side of the formation and kind of cracked back on the safety Clark. I thought, you know, that was just one of those runs. Obviously, it was a touchdown, but it wasn't a long run necessarily, but it was just beautifully designed and executed.
Just a clinic in the run game. I can't help but get my eyes on Dominic Pooney over there in the right guard making his first start. What did you see on the film from Dominic?
Yeah, he looked really good. I didn't watch a ton of preseason football. I'm being honest, it's not my favorite thing. But
that's good honesty.
I thought that he showed early in the game and then throughout the game both strength as a run blocker. I thought he was good at one-on-one pass protection. You know, there's two blocks that in the run game, more than two, but two that you have to be able to execute in the NFL or as a guard in particular, or you're not going to be a starting guard. One is the backside cutoff block. So if the zone run game goes away from you, you have to be able to execute the backside cutoff block. Then in the zone run game, when it goes to your side, you have to be able to execute the front side reach block. In other words, the reach block is a case where the player is just outside of you and you have to get outside of him to seal him to the inside. Those are two blocks that you have to be able to execute, one on the backside, one on the front side. And I thought that he did that very well in this game. And see, he's going to have to continue to do it well.
Senior producer, NFL Films, Greg Cosell is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, as he will be every single Wednesday afternoon on 95.7 The Game. Greg, people for a while now have been running out of questions to ask about Brock Purdy, but one of the ones that was still remaining was, boy, I wonder what he would look like without Christian McCaffrey. So, Greg, what did he look like without Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I mean, to me, those two things are mutually exclusive. I mean, obviously, McCaffrey's a great player, but I mean, when Purdy has to drop back and throw a ball, that's not necessarily a function of Christian McCaffrey. I thought Purdy was kind of Purdy. He was efficient. He made good throws. He's got enough movement that he can move around and make plays. Look, I don't know if we discussed this last week. I can't remember. You know, I'm old, guys. I can't remember what we discussed last week. But you know, Purdy the scheme and the system and Purdy's ability to execute it at a high level all go together. And, you know, there's some great examples of that. Kittle, the 26-yarder to start the second quarter field goal drive, was a beautifully designed what we call a flood concept. It's a three-level stretch concept. Kittle ran the intermediate route. Beautiful design. I'm sure you guys remember Juszczyk's 34-yard reception, which was a Kyle Shanahan classic, because what he likes to do is put a second level defender who has both a run and a pass responsibility. He likes to put that player in conflict, and that's exactly what he did on the Juszczyk 34-yard reception. That was beautiful design. When I saw that play on the coaching tape, you know, I got excited. That's what I love about football. But you know, Purdy just executes what he's asked to execute at a really high level, and I think people lose sight of how difficult that is to do, play after play after play, week after week after week, and they view him, well, he's just running a great system. You know, that's really hard to do, and he does it at a really high level.
Yeah, it was a clinical performance from Brock, and yeah, he didn't have to overwhelm to go out there and have a pretty lopsided victory for the 49ers. I want to ask you about the defense, because other than the early drive in the first half, they had their way with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets offense. What did you see on the film as to why the Niners D had such an edge?
Well, I think their D line, I mean, you could argue the main D line, obviously they sub and have a rotation, but when you have Bosa and Floyd on the edge and Hargrave and Collins inside, and I think we talked about Collins last week, Collins has always been a really, really good player, and I think 49er fans are going to really like this guy, and it showed up the other night, but their defensive front is really, really good, and it's just really difficult to block. And then there's Fred Warner, who I've been saying for years is just the best linebacker in football. I mean, his ability to play inside out with speed and range and his ability to diagnose things instantly. I mean, there's no one as good as Fred Warner at the linebacker position in the NFL. You know, and they've got the thing that I think is overlooked now, too, is they have tremendous length at linebacker, because when they're in their nickel and it's Warner and Campbell, you've got 6'3 and 6'4. And those are traits. People might not think about that, but that kind of length, that those are traits.
So, Greg, here's a question that comes up a lot with 49er fans. There's this thought that whatever Steve Wilks was calling last year just wasn't in alignment with, you know, the defensive line and the secondary and whatever Kyle Shanahan likes to run. The idea this year was they were going to get back to who they were before the hiring of Steve Wilks with Nick Sorensen and Brandon Staley calling plays. What did you see? What can you explain to our audience with regard to the new regime?
You know, and I'm going to be totally honest here. Those are hard questions, and I'll tell you why. Because you'd have to be there in their meetings to understand how things are taught, what they're specifically asked to do. I mean, I think when all's said and done, like in this particular game, they hardly rushed more than four. I think twice on what Rodgers have maybe 23 or 24 dropbacks, I think twice they rushed five. You know, my guess is that this is going to be a defense that's going to rely predominantly on their on the four-man pass rush. Now, there are things they do in third down and sort of pure pass situations with what we call loaded fronts, where they line up three defensive linemen to one side of the center. Often Fred Warner will walk up to the guard opposite that load side, and they'll do some pressure schemes from that. But I think this is going to be a defense that relies a lot on the four-man pass rush, as long as it's being effective, and most weeks it will be. You know, there's always some weeks, you know, that things don't work exactly the right way. You know, I think from a coverage perspective, we saw in this game multiple coverage concepts on third down out of their nickel. They don't play dime. They're a nickel sub defense. We saw cover two, cover one, cover three. I think you'll see these kinds of things depending on the opponent. By NFL standards, I don't think they'll be overly detailed. Now, having said that, if I was sitting in the meetings, I'd probably have a different view. But I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that does a million things. I think it's going to be more execution-based than heavily scheme-based. That would be my sense.
Yeah, the stats indicate that they played out of the nickel 76% of the time and just 24% with the three linebackers. And the second linebacker, fans are concerned, Greg, about Devondre Campbell. He was guarding Wilson a couple of times in that first touchdown drive. It didn't go well. Does he have the speed to hold up in this defense when they go to the nickel and just two linebackers?
Yeah, I mean, he's got length. He can move. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be covering wide receivers man-to-man. There are sometimes the offense, through formation, through motions, can get a wide receiver on a linebacker. That does happen in the league, and there's really very few linebackers that can match up, so that's not a knock on Campbell. I mean, if anybody saw the Chiefs in the Thursday night opener, the way they got Rice matched up on linebackers and good linebackers, then, you know, that happens. They got him matched up on Roquan Smith, who I think most people would agree is a pretty damn good linebacker. So that's not a knock on Campbell, the fact that maybe Wilson beat him once, and I don't remember the specific play, but I mean, you know, that's not the way you're going to evaluate Campbell, by his ability to defend wide receivers.
Obviously, there's been a ton of talk the last handful of weeks about Brandon Ayuk, and we loved what you had to say last week when you talked about his fit in this system. Because he's being eased in, yes, there was at least one, maybe two dropped passes. How would
He dropped a touchdown. He dropped a touchdown.
How would you compare what we saw from Brandon in this game to what you're used to seeing from him?
Well, I think he's played enough games in the National Football League that we know what he is. I mean, obviously he had that touchdown drop, which I'm sure he'd make that catch 9 out of 10 times. I think there was another one where I think it was a quick slant that went off his hands. You know, it's probably a rust issue. No matter what you do and what you do in the off season, if you're not in camp and you're not going through the whole process, it's different when you get into a real game. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Brandon Ayuk. He's played a lot of games in the league. He's been a good receiver. We talked about him last week. He's not all of a sudden going to be a bad receiver. You know, he had a bad drop. He dropped a touchdown. It was very visible. It's a national TV game, you know, so it happens.
Greg, you're officially our pivot point in the week, where we go from looking back to looking ahead, and the Niners getting ready to head to Minnesota, Sunday morning game on the fake field up there in Minnesota. What have you seen on the film from the Vikings that 49er fans should keep an eye out for on Sunday morning?
Well, let's look at the Vikings defense. They were very interesting this past week, and it could have been a function of who they were playing. Obviously, the Giants do not have a great offense. But one of the things that Brian Flores did a year ago, which was fascinating, and you rarely ever see this in the NFL, is it was a team that had the most three-man pass rushes in the league and the most six-man pass rushes in the league. Now, against the Giants, they stayed pretty basic with four-man pass rushes and played a lot of coverage behind it. again, I'm not Brian Flores. I don't know what he'll do against the Niners, but that three-man versus six-man pass rush deal is what's fascinating to me watching their tape a year ago, because you rarely see that kind of thing in the league. And then, of course, on offense, and we can talk about this, you guys can jump in, you got your old buddy Sam Darnold, yep, who looked good last week.
Well, what'd you see? Like, what, you know, because he was here, but we didn't really ever get to see him play.
No.
So, yeah, what did you see from Sam?
I'll tell you what I saw, and I think this is where coaching comes into play. Kevin O'Connell, obviously coming from the Shanahan and McVay tree, you saw Darnold with really clean footwork, really understanding the connection between his drive.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile, and on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Drop and the route concepts. You saw some really well-schemed, well-designed play concepts that really presented him with clean, defined reads so that he could hit his back foot. And if it required him just to hit his back foot and deliver, he'd do that. If it required a hitch, he did that really cleanly. He looked extremely comfortable. Now, it's one game. No one's going to sit here after one game and say, man, this guy's on his way to a great year. But if we're talking this same way after six or seven games, then to me, you really have to talk about the coaching element, because don't forget, he was coached last year, we know, with the Niners, even though he didn't play, and now he's with Kevin O'Connell, who's really, really good. So sometimes that's the difference, because you're dealing with a kid, and you know this, big kid, physical kid, throws the ball well. There's nothing from a physical trait standpoint that he can't do. He always had other issues, including mechanical and including what he was seeing, but he looked very comfortable this past week.
Looked like they were moving the ball around, too, to the various weapons. Justin Jefferson was not too much of an isolated target. I'm curious about the run game from what you saw from Minnesota. Looks like a little bit of a committee, and they use the fullback a little bit, too, don't they?
Oh, they play a lot out of 21 personnel as well with Ham. I can't off the top of my head remember how many snaps he had, but they did that last year. They do it now. Yeah, they have a run game with the fullback as well, and they've got Aaron Jones, who's a really good back and a very good receiver. Got to be careful about that. You know, last week's game obviously was such that they got ahead. It was evident the Giants weren't really going to move the ball, so it didn't really require them to be probably as diverse and multiple offensively as they could be, as they probably went into the game with, but didn't need it. So we'll see how it goes. You'd assume this will be a closer game, but keep in mind, as I started this conversation, this defense did give the Niners some problems a year ago. It's a difficult defense to play against, and they can really pressure you. So that's something that the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan will really have to be aware of. Chris Forster, one of the best line coaches in the league, they'll be working on that, you know, trying to understand all their pressure concepts with different personnel on the field, because that's the last thing for any quarterback, to start a game where you feel like you're under pressure.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films, with us here on Willard and Dibbs. And that's to say this, yes, it's the same concept defensively, but a lot of new personnel. Their defensive line is almost completely different.
Yeah.
Right? I'd wonder if you could compare that group, though, to like the Jets group. Like, what's Brock Purdy facing this week versus last week?
I think he's facing a lot more diversity in pressure concepts. You know, the Jets are not really a high-pressure defense, and when they are, their particular concepts are, I don't want to say they're basic, that's not the right word, but they're not. They don't have a ton of them, whereas Minnesota has a lot of different looks. Minnesota often lines up with six or seven on the ball, on the line of scrimmage, so you don't know who's coming, who's dropping out. They make it difficult to try to figure that out, because you have to make sure you protect. You can't just say, well, I think that guy's going to drop out. You can't do that. So you have to, protection becomes a really critical issue. Protection first. You don't have a pass game if you don't have protection.
And Minnesota with a couple of really vaunted players in the secondary, Stephon Gilmore, and they got Harrison Smith. How do you like those matchups, Minnesota's secondary against the likes of Debo, and assuming Brandon Ayuk can play more, Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not a heavy man coverage team. That's the thing. Surprisingly, even when they pressure, they play more zone concepts. Now, zones always have a matchup element to them, but they're not a heavy straight man-to-man team. So it's not so much, hey, this guy's going to have Samuel, this guy's going to have Ayuk. That's not really the way they play. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, obviously, they've got some different players. They signed Van Ginkel, who's a really good player from Miami. He showed up this past week. They signed Blake Cashman from Houston, who was very good for Houston a year ago before he got hurt. And what they basically did is they swapped out Danielle Hunter, for Jonathan Grenard. Hunter's a little better, but Grenard's a very good player as well.
Greg, before you go, I'd like to ask you this, even though, look, it's only been 1 week, and this might feel a little speculative, but based on what you know and what you saw this week, what kind of an outlook and optimism would you have for this 49er defense as a whole and it's standing within the league?
Well, I think their front, let's talk in terms of playing nickel, because you end up playing nickel more than you play base. I think their front six is among the better front sixes in the league. We talked about their down four. We talked about Warner being the best linebacker in the league. Campbell, in my view, will be fine. Obviously, it's safety. I don't know if Hufanga is coming back. You guys might know that better. I don't know what his status is. Obviously, they played Odom, who throughout much of his career has been a high-level special teams player and a spot starter. They used Odom and Jair Brown kind of interchangeably. They both played on the back end. They both played in the box. Ward's a really good corner. The question becomes the other two corner spots. When they're in nickel, Lenoir goes into the slot, and they played Yotam on the outside. You know, I don't know if that's going to stay all year. I don't know what their feeling is about Renardo Green. He's a player I really liked coming out of Florida State. Florida State was a man-heavy defense, played a ton of press man, and I really loved Green. I don't know how he did through training camp, so I can't answer that. But I think that's where, I don't want to call it a concern. I would just say that's what we'll be looking at to see how that plays out when they play against really good passing offenses and really good receivers.
Greg, we're going to do it every Wednesday, and you just showed everybody why. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Look forward to it next week.
Yeah, indeed. So do we. That's Greg freaking Cosell right there. Senior producer, NFL Dang Films.
Dropping knowledge.
Woo!
Greg, you may want to pick that up. You just dropped some knowledge over there.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.